Something devastating has happened, and again, unconfirmed report that a plane has crashed into one of the towers there. We are efforting more information on this subject as it becomes available to you.
Barack Obama, 47 years old, will become the president-elect of the United States.
We continue now our reports on the aftermath of President Kennedy's assassination in Dallas, Texas.
I have a dream.
The results of the North Vietnamese offensive are an unforgettable reality here in South Vietnam.
Morning. Man is about to launch himself on a trip to the moon.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality.
Now, 6 years later, Mr. Nixon's own leadership has failed. And tonight, 2 hours from now, he's going on television reportedly to tell the nation that he is quitting, the ultimate victim of the Watergate scandal that destroyed his administration.
Joining us this hour to go through history, that was quite something to hear those news clips, wasn't it, is Professor Timothy Naftali. He is Professor of History and Public Service at NYU, and he just has really been at the forefront of a lot of historical events in the last 40 or so years. He's co-director of their Center for United States and the Cold War. He writes on national security, intelligence policy, international history, presidential history, co-author of One Hell of a Gamble, Khrushchev, Castro, and Kennedy, and Khrushchev's Cold War. He wrote a history of U.S. counterterrorism policy as a consultant to the 9/11 Commission. He has published Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism, was the founding director of the Federal Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Museum in Yorba Linda, California, and authored the library's exhibit on Watergate, oversaw the release of 1.3 million pages of presidential documents. He's done many other things, but we're just delighted to have him with us. Professor Tim Naftali, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
Yeah, we'll have fun. And our phone number is 800-486-8655 for you to answer the question: when you look at the most important historical event that has happened in your lifetime, what would that be? And Professor Naftali, you've been through so many historical moments, I need to ask you the question, but I would imagine you have more than a few.
Well, yes. I mean, that's one of the things that when you're a historian, you both experience things as just, you know, citizen, and you also experience things after the fact as you look back and you come to understand the significance of an event. I would say, as just an ordinary citizen and person of the world, I believe that September 11th is one of the 10 most significant events that occurred in my lifetime. That I think for me, equally important was not equally important, but as important in that list would be the election of Barack Obama. I believe that since this survey was done in the summer, mm-hmm. I suppose if it had been done a little bit later, some people might have actually added the election of Donald Trump as a very significant event. I'm too young to remember the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and I know the importance of Vietnam from studying it historically. It didn't shape my life, but it was really interesting to me, Kathleen, in looking at these lists, is the similarities. September 11th tops all four lists, and
yes.
The way that the Pew Foundation did this, they divided it. They give you a list of, you know, the poll results for everybody, and then they break it down by generation:
mm-hmm.
Millennials, Generation X, Baby Boomers, and the Silent Generation. All four generations cited September 11th, and it tops all four lists.
Yeah, let's hear about that day, and then we'll talk about why it might top all four lists, not might, why it does.
A plane has crashed into one of the upper floors of the World Trade Center. Now, according to eyewitnesses, it appeared that the plane, and we don't know exactly what that plane is, was having some difficulty. It was being described by witnesses as listing back and forth from wingtip to wingtip, and it is difficult to tell from this perspective, but we are being told that the plane may be embedded in that upper floor of the World Trade Center.
What a morning that was, and then a scramble to figure out who had done this and the whole historical background. It was something that nobody probably ever imagined would happen here in the United States, and everybody was struggling to figure out what this meant. No wonder it's number one on everybody's list, Professor.
No wonder. Not only was it a searing, difficult moment for everyone, whether or not you actually knew someone who died as a result of the attacks, but it was the surprise. And one of the things that is not on the list, and that's because I was surprised that it wasn't on the list among the silent generation, the World War II generation, but for people, if you had done this survey 25 years ago, Pearl Harbor would have been on the survey. I think when you have a dramatic surprise, a surprise attack, it shakes everyone. It's not simply because of the loss of life, but it's your sense of security disappears in an instant. And for everyone, regardless of age, September 11th was just such a day. And the fact that it happened in the television age made it even more dramatic because of those pictures and because that many of us were watching it live.
Right.
And no one knew what would happen, what would be next. The script was being written in front of us. So it didn't surprise me to see that atop all four lists.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk to some listeners as we're weaving in and out of what's on this list and start with Pepin, who I believe put this at the top of her list as well. Pepin in Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't 9/11 that was the biggest historical event to me. It was how we reacted to 9/11 when they created the torture memos, which essentially used some postmodernist technique to say something was torture when it clearly wasn't torture when it clearly was. And I think that those playing with words and knowing that you can get away with it because some people are going to believe it because they want to, kind of created the situation that we're in today.
Mm. There certainly was a long aftermath of 9/11. The invasion of Iraq was certainly a big issue for a number of people. It's really been with us, the aftermath of that horrible day, in all the years since, hasn't it, Tim?
It has, and in fact, right now, the debate over the travel ban, or we could call it an attempted Muslim ban, that is bringing up that whole issue of what is our status now? Are we at war? What kinds of limits on our privacy and our rights are necessary because of the threat? What is the threat? How dangerous? How is it an existential threat? These are the kinds of questions we are asking again now, and we've been asking them in one form or another since September 11th.
Mm-hmm. Did you find some unusual differences in responses when you looked at different generations' response to what was the most important historical event?
Yes. Well, first of all, and I grant that this may be because I was the first federal director of the Nixon Library, and the federal government was given responsibility for the library in 2007. I was surprised not to see Watergate on any of these lists. Because to some extent, our understanding of what can go wrong with a president is a product of the country's experience of Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just surprised not to see that anywhere. I was not surprised by what the millennials chose, because not only do they have a lot of history to experience, they haven't experienced many of the events that baby boomers and even Generation X people had experienced. So the fact that they chose Sandy Hook, the Boston Marathon bombing, didn't surprise me at all. I mean, those are very important events. It's just that when you have personally experienced 35, 40 years of events, very, very important moments may not make the top 10.
Yeah, well, I would have put Nixon's resignation on my top 10 as well. And with you in mind, knowing what you did with the releasing of tapes and all of the thousands, millions, actually, of pages and your association with Richard Nixon and studying him, we put him on our list for you. So here we will all remember Richard Nixon.
And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I could say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
It was such a major moment in U.S. history. It's hard to imagine that that wouldn't have been on a lot of people's list.
I was surprised. And it's not just that it was important for people who were alive in 1974 when he resigned. The waves of change created by that event continue to shape our country. A lot of what people saw disappear, a lot of the protections on privacy that disappeared in the aftermath of 9/11, those protections, the special court for warrants, for example, those were put in place because of the Nixon era, because of the abuses of that period. Some of the discussions we have today about conflict of interest and about the proper use of funds, those all came to the fore because of what Richard Nixon did. So I think people don't realize the extent to which Watergate actually shaped the world in which they live now.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Lydia in Duluth. Hi, Lydia.
Hi.
Hi.
I live in Duluth, but I'm a student at UW-Superior. Across the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a millennial. I was born in 93. And so for me, I think some of the biggest events, as a young person in third grade, my very formative years watching the towers get hit, everything at school just stopped.
Right.
The TVs turned on, the staff were just, as a 10-year-old, 8-year-old, just having no real understanding of what was happening. And then I had to fly somewhere in November, and so I had never experienced an airport, and to me it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think another really formative thing is when gay marriage passed. I was an adult now, and I was sitting in a laundromat with my husband watching it on the internet, watching the green lights light up. And as they lit up and, when it was confirmed, we were, yelling and, cheering. We're in a laundromat. People are just looking at us like we're crazy. But having that impact, so many people I knew, that gay marriage is something that, to me, was a basic right, something that people should have, and mm-hmm. that it took that long to do it.
Mm. Thank you so much, Lydia. And that did make number 9. On the list of most important to Americans.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
That was a major decision, wasn't it, Professor?
Well, Lydia's comments are very moving.
Yes.
Because she was talking about people she knew about. And because the LGBTQ community feels less threatened than it ever has in its history, people are now seeing, I didn't know he was gay or she's a lesbian. They didn't know it because it was hidden. And so people in the Generation X and Millennial generations, both generations, they know people. They also may themselves be affected by this change. You don't see gay marriage on the list for baby boomers and the silent generation. I mean, it may be number 12, but it's not on the top 10. But it is for both the Millennials and Generation X. And that, I think, there are a couple of things that make an event. The way I like to talk about it in class with students is that there are times when your personal history overlaps with world history or American history.
Sure, it does.
These are events that are so powerful. They affect you personally. And, of course, September 11th, as we've discussed, was one of those. Some of these others, it depends on which community you grow up in, on whom you know, because some of these events may not affect you. I mean, as I said, for the silent generation, gays were very deeply closeted in that period. So they may not even know that they know gay people. So for some of them, they may think, well, this doesn't affect me at all. So it's interesting that some of these events are on the list, not simply because they were great big television events, but because people knew people or were themselves involved. I mean, a number of the people, I don't doubt, who mentioned the Iraq or Afghan wars either fought in these wars or knew people or related to people who fought in these wars. So it's very personal, too.
Right. And let's look at another war where that was the case, because a lot of people were affected by the draft. I know people who left the country because of they're getting a high draft number and they were about to have to go to Vietnam and they chose not to. It was a very tumultuous time in American history. And I was alive during that time period. But the Vietnam War was number 5 on this list.
But opposition to the war was growing. Voices of those objecting to U.S. involvement in Vietnam were getting louder. In May of 1970, 4 students were killed by National Guard troops during a campus protest at Kent State University in Ohio.
That certainly affected, and I was thinking about it and had a chance to talk to my dad, who was alive and went into the Navy after Pearl Harbor. But you think of the immediate effect on millions of American lives in terms of whether or not they're going to take up arms. So both Pearl Harbor and Vietnam had dramatic impacts on the lives of young people in this country, didn't they?
And Kathleen, what's really interesting about this is you're bringing up one of those on the list where people might have different reactions to it.
Right.
What I'm saying is that with September 11th, it's was a sad, deeply troubling moment, and it led to a period of incredible American unity, national unity. Vietnam was different. It did not lead to national unity. It led to searing national disunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may be on people's lists, but for different reasons. Some of those people are going to remember it as a time of activism when it got them into the streets. Others are going to see it as a time of lost American promise. Others are going to say it was a misunderstood war. It's on people's lists for different reasons. It's one of those events in the top 10 that actually divides people and doesn't unite us.
We're talking this hour about the top 10 events that defined your time on this, the most important events that happened in the country, how you would list them, the top number one, and how you would list top 10. And we're looking at the Pew Research Center's findings on this. They interviewed over 2,000 Americans and asked them what were the 10 events during their lifetime that had the greatest impact on the country, and we're talking about the results of that, and then looking at it, comparing generations. We've done some of that. We'll compare racial answers to this, too, because the African-American community and the white community had some differences in what they put on top 10. We'll talk about what was absent on white lists and what was predominant on African-American lists as well. Our guest is Timothy Naftali. He's a clinical associate professor of history and public service, co-director of NYU's Center for the United States and the Cold War. And he has a number of other involvements as well. He's done a lot of writing, and he was founding director of the Federal Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Museum. He authored the library's exhibit on Watergate. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. And we'll return to phone calls. John in Madison, hi.
Hi. Well, definitely the Vietnam War was the number one issue in my life. I was in college at the time throughout the war, and it was an omnipresent threat to me personally. I didn't want to hurt anybody in Vietnam, and I couldn't see any reason for it. And the biggest thing I learned out of that war was my country wasn't the country I thought it was. I saw it perpetuate total torture on the infrastructure in South Vietnam, the Phoenix program, They used chemical weapons that destroyed 60% of the forest and 40% of all the farmland. And the bombing was the most horrible of it, the saturation bombing with white phosphorus, the burning up of villages all over the country. In 95, the Vietnamese government said that they lost 5 million people, 2 million civilians in the south, 2 million civilians in the north, and a million combatants. And that's not covering our 58,000 Americans lost, or the 220,000 Argonne troops who were lost.
What would you put number two on your list, John?
The Iraq War, for the same reason. It was an economic war.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. We have somebody else who wants to talk about Vietnam. Willie in Madison. Hi, Willie.
Hi. Yeah, I want to say the same thing. Largely, a lot of what John said. The thing it did in my life, I went to college, a young Republican, believed most of the garbage we had been told about what a moral country we were. And the teach-ins that they had about the Vietnam War, the way they presented it, you know, look, this happened. Read the Geneva Accords. See what they said. Why did the Americans not allow the election in 56?
Thanks very much for your call. It would appear that some people whose lives were dramatically affected by an event have had that influence a good portion of their lives, Timothy, beyond the decade in which that happened.
Yes, and it continues to shape, though less so, it continues to shape some of what is said by our leaders. I think this presidential election was the last, I believe, where you will see two baby boomer candidates. If President Trump runs for re-election, at least for one more election with a baby boomer as a major party candidate. But that's a big deal. And for baby boomers who have risen in to the top of the American political pyramid, Vietnam never went away. But the debate was whether, you know, it was a war that should have been fought or a war that was a complete mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That shaped a lot of our policy debates and discussions for the decades that followed Vietnam. And for many people, it's a wound. Those that think of Vietnam as Kent State, that horrible event where four people died when the Ohio National Guard started shooting against demonstrators. For others, Vietnam is the story of the veterans who came home and were almost disregarded by their country.
Absolutely.
So wherever you stood on the war, you left that experience with scars, and they didn't heal on the face of the American psyche.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another presidential election. The Pew report says that while the September 11 attacks were easily at the top of the list for whites, this shares the top spot among African Americans in this country.
We understand that greatness is never a given. It must be earned. Our journey has never been one of shortcuts or settling for less. It has not been the path for the faint-hearted, for those who prefer leisure over work or seek only the pleasures of riches and fame. Rather, it has been the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things, some celebrated, but more often men and women obscure in their labor, who have carried us up the long, rugged path towards prosperity and freedom.
The election of President Barack Obama, number two for African Americans in this country, and actually it's number one for African Americans. It shares the top spot with the 9/11 attacks, the election of President Barack Obama. And also, we'll talk about the disparities here. This is another issue. The civil rights movement, which certainly was a dramatic and important time in American history, it ranks behind only the election of Obama and 9/11 on the list of most significant events for blacks, but is absent from the top lifetime events for whites. We'll ask our guest why that's so is right after we hear Dr. Martin Luther King.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Professor, I found that interesting, that there are things on the list that African Americans put there that are absent, or they're much higher than where white Americans in America put this. What do you make of that?
Well, it saddens me a bit.
Me too.
Because the but I think part of it, I think part of it is that for African Americans, the civil rights movement is not just in the 60s. If you see the civil rights movement as continuing beyond the 60s, then it's also shaping Generation X. If you just see the civil rights movement as something of the 60s, then Generation X didn't experience it.
Right.
And the younger baby boomers really didn't experience it either, because the baby boom is oddly defined, but it continues to includes those born in 1964. Well, you were only 4 years old when Martin Luther King died. You're too young if you were born in 1964, you're too young to remember the death of Martin Luther King.
Right.
So I think part of the explanation is that the civil rights movement is alive and well in the minds of much younger African Americans, I suspect, than whites. Simply, it's more present.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a phenomenon of the 60s. I think that's one of the explanations. Because even whites who were not supportive of the civil rights movement, if you went to the South and you asked segregationists, they would say the civil rights movement is one of the most powerful things of their lifetime. Right? I mean, they wouldn't have nice things to say about it. They wouldn't be positive about the phenomenon, but it certainly changed their world. So I think part of this is how people define the movement. I've been thinking about that, because racism alone doesn't explain it, because there are racists who will say the civil rights movement really shaped, in a negative way for them, their world. So I just don't think racism is the answer. I think it has to do with whether the civil rights movement is a living thing for you and your family past the 1960s, and I suspect that is true for many African-American families.
Yes. All right, let's go to Tom next in West Dallas. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Kathleen. This is a great show here, and it's really got my mind thinking back to the past. As I was telling your screener, I'm not sure if I want to admit to this or not, but I'm of the age that I have lived through virtually all of the events you're talking about today. So my touchstone or one event I think that stands out as being most significant is the Kennedy assassination, the first Kennedy, I should say, John F. Kennedy, the president. And the way I would describe that is basically it was a loss of innocence. We were just living at a time when, you know, the Beatles were first getting started, and they were still playing Elvis Presley records on the radio, and it was just unimaginable that something like that could ever happen. And I was in, I was in sixth grade. I remember that very distinctly, because those were probably two of the worst years. Fifth grade wasn't any better, because that was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
And so, you know, just getting through those 2 years, but I remember very distinctly the school secretary coming into our classroom, and she went up to the teacher who was sitting at his desk, and she whispered something in his ear. And all I can remember is him just putting his hand up to his mouth, and he just got real pale and a shocked look on his face. And then, of course, when she left, he told the class what had happened, and they closed school down by noon that day. They sent everybody home. And so that's my event that really stands out in my mind.
Yeah, you know, I was alive during that time as well, Tom, and it's way up on my list. And it was Very hard news. Imagine being a newscaster. Many people will remember, and it will still bring a tear to your eyes to hear Walter Cronkite telling the nation.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
I like Tom's description of that, that it was a loss of innocence. It was a very jarring event in this country. Professor?
I don't remember it. My first, but I know that it was. I mean, I've spent time writing about President Kennedy. I've talked to people who worked with him, and I know lots of people, including my parents, for whom the death of JFK was a shocking moment. There's no question that for many people, the start of the 60s, that the 60s start after the death of JFK, and the sense that the troubled 60s start after JFK. And I think for some baby boomers, the death of Robert Kennedy was probably in their top 20.
Yes.
Because that, and with the almost simultaneous assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, mm-hmm. In 1968, they were like bookends of this horrible, horrible decade of loss, and the sense that no one was protected, and Kennedy, the two Kennedys and King, were vessels of hope for a lot of people, and the fact they could be gunned down made people wonder about the promise of the country and whether it somehow had disappeared. One of the things I do is to get a sense of where my students are, and also keep track of what they know. I always ask them, "What is your first political memory?"
Oh, you do.
What is the first big? I always say every year, because it helps me, you know, keep tabs on what I shouldn't expect them to have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have students, as you can imagine, that do not have any memory of 9/11.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
And well, I teach university, but that's
right.
where we are. And one of the things what we all have to keep in mind is that as time goes by, things that have shaped our consciousness, our way of thinking about this country, about ourselves, we don't share them with everybody. And it's because of age cohort, not necessarily because of ethnic backgrounds or race or religion. It's because we're just older than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so interesting about the list is how the fact that there are some things that appear on everybody's list. September 11th, of course, and President Obama's election appears on all four lists. The fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War appears on three of the lists, and the only reason it doesn't appear on the list for millennials is they're too young to remember 1989.
Well, let's go to another event that took place in the 1960s, and it was preceded by this. Mark from Fort Atkinson writes, for me, it was, I won't even say what it was, because he'll get, I don't want to give it away. So yeah, here was what was, where was it, Scotty? Moon landing number 7. This was number 7 on the list, and here was the event.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Oh, that looks beautiful to me, Neil.
It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
Very pretty out here, yeah. Marcus on Facebook writes, preceding, of course, the moon landing, as a small boy lying on a front lawn on a blanket with my dad in the early 60s watching a Gemini spacecraft that was floating overhead. And then Mark from Fort Atkinson, for me it was the moon landing. I was only a kid, but I still recall the feeling. All the other events on the list I've heard were mostly those of human tragedy, but the moon landing transcended all of that, simultaneously elevating an incredible achievement of man and highlighting what a small speck of dust that we live on. I think even though it was an American achievement, for that moment, the whole world took pride. It was one of those moments, Professor.
Well, and I can bear witness to that. I grew up in Canada. My dad built me. I was a young boy, but I remember the moon landing, and it was an international event. It was an American achievement, but it was a human achievement. And I remember my father buying an Atlas, you know, one of those amazing, I think it was made by Ravel, a model Apollo spacecraft, and I believe it was a Atlas rocket, Saturn rocket, and he built it for me. So that as Cronkite and Shira, I think it was Shira, Wally Shira,
yes,
the astronaut, as they described what was happening, I had my own little plastic version of it.
Isn't that great?
And it's great. So one of the things about these lists, and by the way, I noticed that the silent generation, I'm mistaken, they didn't include the fall of communism, but that's because there's just so much that happened in their lives. But,
yes.
But, you know, these lists also include things that are international events. And if you were to ask people, not just from Canada, but from Mexico or Germany or Japan, or a number of these would also appear on their list. So let's keep in mind that some of the things that Americans do and some of the things Americans experience are international events that would appear on many lists for many countries.
Yes. Here's the item that was number, 3 on the list. Ooh, this is way up there. And this has changed our lives so completely, it's just amazing. For those of you who remember typewriters and how you used to call Ready Reference to the library to find out all the information you needed or you'd research something, this has been a profound difference in the way that we gather information. Number 3. The tech revolution.
Later, Apple would change the smartphone forever with the iPhone in 2007, and now it seems almost everyone has one. Society has its collective head buried in these rectangular touchscreen devices, doing everything from emailing, surfing the web, playing games, video chatting, using maps, and watching video.
And the internet, my goodness, it's amazing to me. I think about it every single day, Professor Naftali. All this information is right there. It just amazes me.
Well, it's just not an event. I mean, the thing is, it's an everyday experience.
Right.
But, think about, well, I teach classes on the history of intelligence, espionage, and the making of the modern world, and I point, you know, and most students have iPhones, and I, you know, say to them, you know, in your iPhone you have more intelligence capabilities, you have more intelligence acquisition capabilities than the CIA had in the 1950s before satellites. You know, we carry out around with ourselves the ability to communicate and to acquire information that two generations ago people would have thought would be science fiction. And we've actually adapted to that pretty fast. It's not an ageist thing. It's actually happened across generations. My mother uses an iPhone, or certainly she uses an iPad. But so I think that what binds us together are good stories as well as tragic ones, as one of the callers pointed out in talking about the moon landing, and that's important too. We don't want to just be bound together in sorrow. We also want to remember those things that we collectively have done as a civilization.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the United States now. Have done as a civilization, and I believe that's important, and particularly going forward as people seem to emphasize the things that make us different, the division. When we talk about partisanship all the time. One of the things that what makes a country work is that there's collective pride, there's national pride, and it's good that there are a few things on this list. I'm afraid not as many as I'd like to see, but there are a few things on this list that are positive achievements. There's something that we can all be respectful of and proud of at the same time.
Absolutely. Professor Timothy Naftali is our guest. As we look at the list of Pew Research asked over 2,000 Americans, what's the most significant historic event in your lifetime? And we're coming up with listening to some of the sound from their answers of the events that they put in the top 10. And we're also asking you to answer that question. We'll go through a number of phone calls here after we pause for a moment. So here is our number, 800-486-8655. And this is a perfect thing for you to go to our Facebook page, to the Kathleen Dunn Show, and answer the question, so we can read all the responses and live through your history on Facebook, which we couldn't have done before the Internet revolution, right? So thanks to that. This is the Ideas Network.
The despair the wall caused among the people it divided made it a hated obstacle to human dignity. Tonight, the people had their revenge. Tomorrow, Bernauerstrasse will be reopened. Residents will once again stroll the length of the neighborhood, but the bitter memory of the Berlin Wall won't die quickly.
Follow the Berlin Wall on number 8 on a composite of everybody's list, and that was NBC News' Arthur Kent reporting in 1989. Let's take a few phone calls here if we can. Dennis in Beloit. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, thank you for the show. There are a lot of significant events. Kathleen, you and I are contemporaries, so...
We're getting old, huh, Dennis?
So, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, of course, I was in high school, and I realized that it was serious, but I'm a reader of history. And as more and more information becomes declassified, we were just hours from nuclear war. And had that happened, I think we all know that everything since then may not have happened. It was very serious, and I won't bore you, but a Russian submarine was out of communication due to communication failure with Moscow, and the commander was on his own authority to launch missiles if he felt it was the appropriate thing to do. So we were very, very close.
We were, Dennis, very close. Professor Naftali.
Well, I wrote a book about the Cuban Missile Crisis called One Hell of a Gamble with a Russian scholar. When the Russian materials started to come out in the 90s. And your caller is correct. It was an extraordinarily dangerous moment. And both sides were acting out of fear. And it's very, very dangerous when states act out of fear. And what happened, and that's a lesson for everyone, is that both leaders, both Nikita Khrushchev, the leader of the Soviet Union, and John F. Kennedy, did not want this to spiral out of control. They were angry at each other. Kennedy felt betrayed by the Soviets, who had promised him that they would not put missiles in Cuba. Nikita Khrushchev felt the United States was... didn't respect the Soviet Union enough around the world, that weren't giving the Soviets what they wanted in the center of Europe, for example. They were both angry, but their anger wasn't as important as their concern about an unwanted accidental nuclear war. And so both of them, after taking deep breaths, decided to be statesmen and found a diplomatic way out of this crisis. It's one of those moments in history where statesmanship truly mattered and made a difference.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dennis, for your call. Barb and Tomahawk, hi.
Hi. I, too, have lived through most of the aforementioned events, but for me, Sandy Hook is the biggest thing. I can't imagine anything more devastating than to send children off to a place where we think they're safe to educate them in our own hometowns and have a graduate of that school come in armed and take the lives of so many. For me, still when I think of it, it brings me to tears. I can't imagine anything more devastating to our communities than that. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I certainly understand that. Sometimes depends where you grew up, and that this has nothing to do with Sandy Hook, which you know was searing for an adult. You don't have to experience that as a child. But when I was a kid, there was terrorism in where I lived in Montreal, and people received letter bombs, and a member of the local provincial government was killed by terrorists. Though it didn't affect my school, as a young person, to lose the sense of innocence and security when you suddenly, because you couldn't shield, you know, kids from this kind of information, it really changed the way you thought about the world. And I can imagine for parents, let alone for uncles and nieces and uncles like me, but for parents, how do you explain to your child, because they're going to see the images somewhere, about the fact that a school is not a safe space? I can imagine the pain and the concern, because you don't want children to grow up anxious, but you also want them to be aware of what's going around them. And I can't imagine what it was like to try to explain Sandy Hook to kids, and I can't imagine how hard it was for children who learned about Sandy Hook.
Absolutely.
So I don't doubt it's on. It will be on lists for the rest of for a long time, as the children of the Sandy Hook generation grow up.
Mm-hmm. Another shooting, and we become there's so many of these that. You have to remember sometimes several of them even in a year. Another shooting that was mentioned by many in this Pew survey was the Orlando shooting.
Traumatized and injured clubbers were helped from the scene and taken to hospital for treatment. One mother received texts from her son who said they were trapped in the toilets and they feared they were going to die. Another mother was distraught trying to find out if her son was still alive.
And let's go to some more phone calls now. Let's go to Crash in Milwaukee. Hi, Crash.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm well. I want to talk about, I'm 40 years old, and I would like to talk about something that I don't think is on many lists, but I'd like to mention the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
All right, and why?
Well, it's my opinion that in the Telecommunications Act of 1996 was kind of the beginning of non-for-profit, or at least not-profit-focused. It was the beginning of the demise of not-for-profit or not-profit-focused journalism in this country, along with our arts and entertainment being consolidated by media forces at a level that's never been experienced on this planet.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's an interesting... There are some things, there are big things that have happened that aren't on the list, but they have changed the direction of the country in many ways and our lives, Professor Naftali.
That's absolutely true. People mention the civil rights movement, they could have just said the Voting Rights Act or the Civil Rights Act. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, both reshaped the country. Mm-hmm. In the end, they took the top 10. I believe, because I'm a historian, I guess I have a vested interest in this. I believe that people can carry more than 10 events in their brain, so that in fact,
right.
if you ask people, they could probably come up with a list of at least 30
right.
that affected them. So let's not think that just because it's not on the top 10 list that Americans have forgotten it.
Right.
That's worth keeping in mind. I would have loved it. Again, I'm in this business, so I guess my tolerance for this is greater than most people's. But I would have liked to have seen the top 20, because
mm-hmm.
I suspect you'd see a lot more commonality in the top 20. Mm-hmm.
And you would also hope that everybody, no matter what generation you're in, would have a pretty deep understanding of other generations' top 10, those that differed from what you had lived through, because we need that, right? I hope that's the case. Well, I don't know.
Yes, I mean, I think that most Americans will know what Pearl Harbor is, even though they're not old enough to have experienced it. I think that millennials will know about the end of the Cold War, even though they're not old enough to have experienced it. I hope that the silent generation would understand the importance of Orlando and Sandy Hook.
Yes.
Even though they've experienced so many things that it didn't make the top 10.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor Timothy Naftali. We could go on for hours on this. It's very interesting. Professor of History and Public Service at NYU. We're going to put the, I don't know if it's on our Facebook page, the top 10 from Pew Research is on our Facebook page. So leave messages. If we couldn't get to you, we'd really like to hear from you. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this program. Thanks to Scotty and Colleen Duvall for doing all the production to get all those clips too. We didn't even have a chance to play all of them, so we thank them for that. And thank you for listening. Until Monday, all things political.